Brexit means Brexit.
Brexit is unumstossbar.
Rocket Man should have been handled a long time ago. He's fired!
Au nom du peuple français!
Wir schaffen das.
Make our planet great again.
Don't worry, be happy.
I will kill you if you destroy my country.
Better is always possible.
Let's do this!
I ain't spending any time on it.
Hello, I'm Brett Mason, in the gallery for SBS World News. Can you hear it? It's the sound of the mass exodus from Canberra, which has, as you would expect, begun in earnest. MPs and senators won't be back here in Canberra until May, when Treasurer Scott Morrison will hand down his budget. This week, One Nation leader Pauline Hanson made this rather startling comparison when questioned about why former foe Tony Abbott was launching her new book.
Like Nelson Mandela did, after 28 years in prison, he forgave and he forgot.
And for the first time in 250 days, we have a full house of 76 senators, with Queensland Liberal Amanda Stoker sworn in and New South Wales Senator Christina Keneally delivering her first speech as opposition leader Bill Shorten watched on.
To be completely candid, I never imagined I would come back to politics. Not because I lost faith in political action of the Australian Labor Party. Not because I lost faith in myself. Simply put, I thought my race was run.
As Senators Darren Hinch and Tim Storer deny the government the two votes it needs to pass company tax cuts, we sit down with independent Queensland Senator Fraser Anning to find out if he regrets supporting the government's proposed changes as quickly as he did.
I don't know what Darren's after, but I'm sure there'll be something in there. And we could have done the same, but, you know, eventually I think it's more important for Australia to get the thing done rather than, you know, any kudos that I'd get by, you know, screwing the government for a few dollars here or there.
But first, here's political reporter Maria Zivic with a look back at a week when Bill Shorten told his caucus colleagues the battle lines for the next election, heaven help us, have now been drawn.
Thanks, Brett. Well, those battle lines are certainly much clearer now, with tax policy front and centre. For Labor, that's included a major retreat on its plan to scrap cash refunds for shareholders, just 2 weeks after the policy was first announced by opposition leader Bill Shorten.
Today I'm pleased to announce that Labor will protect all pensioners from the changes to dividend imputation policy. We are calling this our pensioner guarantee.
The policy will stay, but more than 300,000 pensioners will be exempt. That alone will shave $700 million off projected savings, but help blunt sustained attacks from the coalition led by Treasurer Scott Morrison.
This policy, Mr. Speaker, has been an absolute dog's breakfast. The Shadow Treasurer, I don't know what's worse, the idiot who put it forward or the idiot who agreed with it.
The government's had its own tax policy hurdles and delayed putting legislation for further company tax cuts to a vote this week. That came after it failed to convince two crucial crossbenchers to back the plan. Independent Senator Tim Storer is calling for broader tax changes in return for his support.
I remain to be convinced that I should support this bill in its current form, in isolation from a broader discussion and initiatives on enhancing the overall sustainability of our taxation system.
The next chance to put the legislation to a vote won't come until after the May budget. Prime Minister Malcolm Turnbull's encouraging business leaders to help with negotiations.
But we're not giving up. We're determined to get this passed and we'll be continuing to work with the crossbench to secure it. And I want to encourage you to keep talking to the crossbench.
Talking to the crossbench is one thing, the media another. It was a heated affair earlier in the week as the coalition inched closer to the 30 news poll losses in a row Mr. Turnbull had offered as one of the reasons for replacing Tony Abbott.
Prime Minister, 29 news polls, it's not good news. How are you feeling?
Why are you smiling then if it's not good news? You're so pleased. You're so pleased. I know why. Because you're so happy about all the jobs we've created. Because you are not distracted by polls. You know that we have created 420,700 jobs in Australia in the last year.
The political focus later shifted from Canberra to Russia. Australia joined global action against Russia by expelling two of its diplomats over an alleged nerve agent attack on a former Russian double agent living in Britain. Foreign Minister Julie Bishop met with Russia's ambassador to Australia for a 20-minute session in her Parliament House office.
We did not take this step lightly, but we share the deep concerns, indeed the outrage, that a chemical nerve agent could be deployed in any circumstance. Mr. Ambassador, we seek a credible explanation from Russia as to how its nerve agent could have been deployed in these circumstances.
Ambassador Grigory Logvinov denies any Russian involvement in the attempted assassination. He says the two staff members expelled from Australia were not spies, but rather career diplomats.
If the West would follow this line, I'm afraid we'll be deeply in the Cold War situation. What they want to see as final result, final point. You see, if they want Russia, if they are really hopeful, expect Russia to fall on its knees, to repent, say, yes, we're a bad, please forgive us, and so on. My gosh. You see, it's a blasphemy.
While clearly the Russian ambassador is the undisputed winner of this week's Press Conference of the Week award, the former Prime Minister Tony Abbott gave him a very good run for his money, launching Pauline Hanson's new book here in Parliament House. Let's take a listen.
Between Pauline and myself, there has been a lot of dirty water under the bridge. But her willingness to let the past be the past is a sign of decency, which is all too rare these days in our public life. Back in 1996, Pauline Hanson was a lone voice crying in the wilderness, and sometimes an angry one. In those days, she was damaging what I thought was the best Conservative government in our history. But today, I've got to say, she has worked with her colleagues consistently and constructively in the Senate to help the coalition government to implement its agenda. She and her colleagues have helped to make this Senate so much better than the last one. And if I may say so, Pauline, adversity has made you a better, deeper person, and you are certainly confirmation of that old adage that you are always better the second time around.
Pauline proves the old adage that things are always better a second time around. Do you think that would apply to yourself?
Well, that's an entirely hypothetical question and I couldn't possibly comment.
Incidentally, you don't actually need to buy Pauline Hanson's new book to read her collection of speeches. They're freely available via Hansard online, www.aph.gov.au/Hansard. Meanwhile, Christina Keneally, the new Senator for New South Wales and former New South Wales Premier, has delivered her first speech to the Senate with some rather circumspect reflections about her time here in the press gallery.
When I told my 17-year-old son that I was nominating for the Senate, he said, "Oh, great, now I'm going to have to listen to people telling me all the time how they saw you on television talking about politics." I pointed out that talking about politics on television is exactly what I had been doing for the past 3 years. And he said, "Don't take this the wrong way, Mum, but I don't know anyone who watches Sky News." It may come as a surprise to my son, but there are people who watch Sky News. Many of them are in this building.
The Senate really was the focus of this three-day sitting of Parliament before Easter, as the government tried to woo crossbench senators into supporting its company tax policy. Among those in Matthias Cormann's sights, the independent Queensland Senator Fraser Anning, who spoke with Maria Zivic about a protest in Brisbane, which he spoke at in support of Peter Dutton's plans to provide protection to persecuted white South African farmers.
Yeah, it surprised me, the turnout. I thought a couple of hundred would have been a pretty good turnout, but there were well over 1,000 people there. I'm not sure how many there were there, but I know there were more than 1,000, and that whole area of George Street, end of George Street, was packed with people. So It was great to see that many people who are concerned about these poor farmers in South Africa.
What does that prove? What does it prove, having that many people come out to a rally on this issue? What do you think that suggests?
I think that people are compassionate, and when you hear about some of the atrocities that are being perpetrated on these people, strikes at everyone's heart. They're a similar type of people to us, you know, with similar views and Christian values. And when you hear about children being, you know, drowned in boiling water, for instance, no one can accept that. And I think those people are keen to do something to try and save these people.
Obviously, there was a lot of fallout after Minister Dutton made his initial comments. Do you think, is it a shame, I suppose, in your eyes that the way he made his comments or the way they were perceived perhaps detracted from what actually is quite a serious issue?
I can't remember the comments exactly, but all he was saying was what any normal person would say, you know, that these people are being persecuted, and it's now verging on a genocide as far as I'm concerned. When you have state-sponsored people with the state's complicity in this, slaughtering whites simply because they're white, that's genocide. And there's a post that I read this morning from one particular African gentleman calling for all blacks to attack and slaughter the whites, as there are only 5 million whites and 45 million blacks. And he said, if the people killing the farmers can do it, we can all do it. So let's unite and kill the Boer. They're terrible things, and this is only going to get worse. So it's urgent now that we bring these people to some sort of safety.
So you would certainly, by the sounds of it, back, you know, moves to give these people perhaps special visas or give them, I suppose, precedence over other potential refugees in other parts of the world?
Absolutely. Because of the plight they're in. Some of the refugees we've had here are not refugees. They're illegal immigrants. A lot of them are. They're a burden on our system, on our welfare system. They become problems in our cities, a lot of them. Some of them don't, some of them do. So yes, I'd definitely give them precedence. They have the same values as Australians, Christian values. They're industrious, they work, they don't go on the dole. They're exactly the sort of people that we need in this country to help us develop it and grow the country.
Are you looking to speak to Minister Dutton about this and perhaps, I suppose, echo your words now and help, you know, push this issue along so that there perhaps is some action quite soon?
Absolutely. I'll do whatever I can to help him get this up and running so that we can create visas or whatever we have to do to get them out of there. People are now looking down the barrel of being slaughtered. You know, mums and dads and kids, they know their turn's coming. And it is coming. It's no different to being in a concentration camp where your turn to go into the gas chamber, and maybe next week or next month, but it is going to happen. So we really do have to get them out of there. And the problem is that, you know, these farmers, they're only guilty of building up a farm, producing meat, milk and foodstuffs to feed South Africans, the very same South Africans who are now, some of them, slaughtering them in their homes. And the problem is that once these farms get taken over by these people, as we saw in Rhodesia, the farms will run down, the crops will fail, they won't have any food, they'll start starving, and then they will come to the United Nations and they will demand of us help in the form of foreign aid. And the problem is these butchers will get that foreign aid because, you know, we're bound to, you know, our foreign minister loves to give away a lot of foreign aid. So these people will be supported by us. The same people are butchering these people now. So my policy would be zero foreign aid for these sort of countries who do these things to minority groups, whichever minority group it happens to be. And these just happen to be whites, and for that reason there's a deafening silence from other members of parliament on this issue. There'll be outcries about anyone else, but I think it's because they're white, no one wants to talk about it. And I said, well, why is that? They're being persecuted like other people. So there's some serious problems, and yes, I'll definitely back Peter Dutton's call to get these people here urgently.
Do you find it quite remarkable, the situation, in the sense, you know, if we reflect on South Africa's history?
You mean that it's not a surprise that it's happening?
Well, do you find it remarkable, that flip, you know, if we talk about South Africa's history?
With their apartheid and stuff like that? Yeah, the pendulum swings both ways. I don't believe there has ever been the slaughters that we're seeing now. I know they've been mistreated, and there hasn't been fairness for the black tribes. But in this particular case, that land was never tribal. It was vacant land at the time when the Huguenots came in there, and now they're being persecuted. So what happened before, which was not as horrendous as this, doesn't justify what's happening now.
Mm-hmm. Can I also ask you, just on the company tax cuts, I know you're a supporter of that legislation.
Mm-hmm.
Why were you such an avid supporter of that legislation? Why do you think it's so important to, expand that company tax cut to all businesses?
Well, obviously, we're not competitive here in Australia at 30%. That's way too high when you've got other countries around us in Southeast in Asia, for instance, at 18%, I think, in Hong Kong, and 19% in Singapore and other countries. They're much more competitive than we are. And excuse me, big businesses are no different to ourselves. You know, we'll go wherever we get the best deal. If they're going to get the best deal over there, they'll headquarter their businesses over there. If we can give them a better deal, we'll attract them back on shore, and we'll get some tax. You know, right now some of those countries aren't, those big businesses aren't paying tax here, but we'll start getting taxes. We've just seen what's happening in America. Trump's brought in a much bigger tax cut, and it's been instantaneous, and it's had an instantaneous effect. People are hiring more people. They're expanding their businesses, they're retooling, they're buying machinery, and they're giving wage rises to their staff to ensure that they keep their good staff. So it's necessary. If we want to be competitive in the world, and we're getting less and less competitive, then we need to do these sort of things. The only thing that I think we should have done here, it should have been bigger, and it should have been straight away, not 5% over 10 years. It should have been, you know, maybe 10% over 5 years would have been a lot better.
Mm. So you're very confident then that it will result in wages growth for everyday Australians here?
Absolutely. I'll just give you an example. I have two daughters in America who run a business there, and it's a small business, but since this has happened, they've improved their business. They've done improvements to their land, their property. They've hired two new staff, and all their staff are on higher money. Because they want to try and keep their staff as long as they can. It's just a small business, so it's easy to have your staff, you know, leave, and that's the last thing they ever need. And businesses don't want to lose staff, so you know, if they can employ more staff to be more productive and also pay better, then you keep your staff.
Mm.
And I'm sure it'll happen here. If it happened over there, I can't see why it wouldn't happen here.
Mm. You've been a senator now for 4 months.
Mm-hmm.
This is one of those key pieces of legislation where we see a lot of jostling, a lot of deal making behind the scenes, particularly for those final three, you know, the One Nation group, Darren Hinch and also Tim Storer. They're all managing to nut out their own personal deals with the government on this piece of legislation. Is that something, do you wish you'd held back with your support so that you could do the same for Queensland?
Yeah, I look at that. I did look at that, by the way, and it was a possibility. I think this is a bit too important to do some brinkmanship, you know, and look good on the ones who have done it. You know, Pauline's got 1,000 apprenticeships. That's great. I don't know what Darren's after, but I'm sure there'll be something in there. And we could have done the same, but, you know, eventually I think it's more important for Australia to get the thing done rather than, you know, any kudos that I'd get by, you know, screwing the government for a few dollars here or there. However, I won't rule that out for further down the track on other things when we have some serious stuff that we need to do. And I won't be doing it on little bits and pieces. I'd rather do it on something that's seriously important.
Maria Zivic there, speaking with independent Queensland Senator Fraser Anning. Have a great weekend.
SBS acknowledges the Ngunnawal people who are the traditional custodians of the land on which the Australian Parliament sits and where this program was recorded. We pay respect to the elders of the Ngunnawal Nation, both past and present.